Obituary. Michael Foote. Michael Foote, politician and man of letters, died on March 3rd, aged 96.
He died a much-loved Englishman, renowned for his untidy shock of white hair, his shambling wanderings on Hampstead Heath with his dog Dizzy, his devotion to literature, and the modesty that allowed him, when leader of the Labour Party, to stand in his anorak, waiting at the bus stop, comme tout le monde. Deep into old age, half-blind, he never failed to keep up with the latest works on his great loves, Swift and Byron, and to hold forth over breakfast, several eggs running all over his plate, about the latest troubles of his beloved party and its prospects for the future. He was not always so popular. As a left-wing journalist working for the right-wing proprietor Max Beaverbrook before, during and after the war, the vituperative scorn of his prose injured those who didn't realise that it masked a complete lack of personal malice. But age and familiarity smoothed the sharp edges. "Sweet man, Michael," remarked Anthony Crossland, a revisionist socialist who, in the 1970s, had spent most of his time fighting him. The leadership of the Labour Party was not a job which, for most of his life, he sought. When Jim Callaghan stood down as leader in 1980, the two men most likely to succeed him were Dennis Healey on the right and Peter Shaw on the left. But Mr. Foote, by then 67, had developed a certain fond vanity which was worked on by a Machiavellian trade union leader, Clive Jenkins, to persuade him to stand. The result was the worst disaster that could have befallen Mr. Foote. He won. The Labour Party then was a veritable Bermuda Triangle, containing both ardent followers of the left-wing policies advocated by Tony Benn and a right-wing group led by Roy Jenkins, which was threatening to start a new centre party. Mr. Foote's appeal was that, being of the left but not of the far left, he could hold this combustible mixture together. To a degree, he did. The breakaway was contained. Mr. Foote accepted most of the policies of the left, including unilateral nuclear disarmament, which he had always agreed with, and many others that he hadn't. This was just enough to preserve his party broadly intact. Unfortunately, it also made it unelectable. In the 1983 general election, fought on a manifesto described by one shadow minister as the longest suicide note in history, the party started badly and finished worse. Even before the election, Mr. Foote was not an effective leader. He dithered terribly. At one point, he insisted in the Commons that Peter Tapsell, a left-winger, would never be a Labour candidate while he was leader. A little later, he decided that he could be. Most voters could not conceive of him as a plausible Prime Minister. He seemed to come from another age, perhaps the 19th century, a West Country radical in his family's best tradition. He couldn't get the hang of television and horrified the country by appearing at the cenotaph one Remembrance Day in a short, scruffy coat. By the time he stepped down gratefully after his defeat, he seemed a tragicomic figure. His political judgment was dodgy from the beginning. In 1974-75, when he first went into government as employment secretary, he was responsible for relations with the trade unions. In the words of one cabinet member of the time, the relationship was one of give and take. The government gave and they took. Industrial subsidies, housing subsidies, even food subsidies flowed out in an effort to buy low-pay settlements. All were enthusiastically supported by Mr. Foote. None made a jot of difference to escalating wage agreements. Mr. Foote was slow to realise this. But once he had, he entered perhaps the most effective period of his political life. In an extraordinary speech to his party's conference in 1976, he quoted Joseph Conrad, "Always facing it, Captain MacWhirr. That's the way to get through. Always facing it. That's the way we've got to solve this problem." By 1978, The economy was back on an even keel, and Labour was neck and neck in the polls. But Mr. Foote, by then the leader of the House of Commons, convinced himself that his party would lose an election that October. More important, he convinced the Prime Minister. The election was postponed to the spring of 1979. The winter of discontent, with widespread strikes, intervened. This was the first of two elections which Mr. Foote delivered to Margaret Thatcher on a plate. He could seem unworldly. As a minister, he once boarded a plane to a socialist international conference in Europe without a penny in foreign currency, carrying only a leather-bound volume of Hazlitt. Yet in one sense, he was entirely worldly. He had an instinctive understanding of people. He wrote beautifully and, after overcoming a stammer, was a wonderful orator, humorous, self-deprecating, empathetic. He could be a hater. Anyone who failed to perceive the genius of his hero, Aneurin Bevan, whose biography he wrote, had best look out, but he was incapable of sustained malevolence. Over the last few years of his life, Mr. Foote contemplated writing a serious work of socialist philosophy. Instead, he embarked on a biography of an eccentric literary genius, H.G. Wells. In the end, that seemed to suit him better.